What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Black Hollywood Live's Black Tea Party. Today, we're talking Trump versus the Pope. Who would have thought those words would ever come out of anyone's mouth? Apple versus the FBI, and of course, the politics and the contentious politics behind Antonin Scalia's replacement. All that coming up next on Black Tea Party.
You are now tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Black Tea Party.
Howdy, 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 howdy!
What's good?
What's going on, everybody? I'm Julian Dujarric. You can follow me across the board on all social media at Julian Dujarric. I'm joined with a couple of very handsome and smart men.
Yeah.
Introduce yourselves, brothers.
What's up, y'all? I'm Black Fist Activist, also known as Anthony Martin, out here today. Check me out all social media. I'm out here, man. What's good?
Hey, hey, I'm just happy to be in the house. I'm Don Nash, y'all. Check me out on Twitter, Don's Daily Dose, Instagram, Mr. Don Nash, Facebook, Don Nash. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about
it. Let's make some tea.
Yeah. Let's spill some tea and make it.
Let's spill some tea.
Let's spill the tea we make. Hey, I don't even know what that means.
We got some tea this week.
Some tea for sure.
It's been quite a week, for sure. Like I teased at the top of the show, Trump is in the headlines again.
Always, man.
Always. Headliner. It wouldn't be a political show if we're not talking about Trump. Specifically, for those who don't know, there's a bit of a feud between Trump and the Pope. Oh, boy. This guy never fails to disappoint. Did you just do that? Oh, boy.
Holy
Well, hopefully... he's watching. He is with us today.
Oh my goodness.
So basically, just to give it a kind of like in layman's terms, the Pope recently said that he was alluding to maybe that Donald Trump isn't as pious, as much of a Christian as he claims to be, given the fact that he's perpetuated some disparaging remarks about people that are less fortunate and disenfranchised members of society. Trump went on the offensive and said that basically he, the Pope, has no right or no place to question, because he's a religious leader, to question Donald Trump's Christianity, the deepness in which he is convicted to the Christian faith. This is according to Donald Trump. So, I'm wondering, what do you guys think of this whole convoluted mess that's happening?
I'll be honest. I don't really know what to think. I will say this, though. You know, the Pope, this new Pope, we've known him to be very political, I guess you could say that. So he's been in a lot of the different things that are going on in politics lately in the past year or so. So I wouldn't put it past him to say anything about it. One thing I will say is he used it in a more religious manner. So he said it, you know, he said basically like a person that builds walls and not bridges isn't a Christian. So he's using it, he's going the Christian route. He is getting into politics.
Right.
I think that he's entitled to his opinion just like Trump is. I mean, if we're going to get mad at the Pope, then we got to get mad at Trump for some of the stuff he's saying. So I'm kind of just on the fence with it. Not on the bridge. I mean, not on the wall. I'm on the bridge, but not on the wall. Yeah, so okay. I don't know what to say about it.
You
know,
what about you, Don?
I'm not Catholic. I went to Catholic school, so I can, you know.
Are you religious at all?
I am. I'm a man of faith. Okay. And I was
What does
very,
that mean? I'm sorry to keep interrupting.
It means that I have a faith. I have a constitution of my faith that governs my life, you know.
But it's not a specific religion.
Well, I'm Christian.
Okay.
I am Christian.
Cool.
And so, but I'm not Catholic.
Okay.
And oftentimes in Christendom, you have Christians that don't necessarily listen to the teaching so much of Catholicism, if you will, although the Roman Catholics did canonize the Bible.
Right.
It's just a little history, just in case you didn't know.
Bow.
But the interesting thing about the Pope coming out, and this particular Pope, he speaks with a lot of profundity. He brings to the core of our humanity and our morality. He challenges and charges us for it. The last time when he came to New York and, you know, he met with, you know, Obama, he met with a lot of the officials in the Senate and the Speaker of the House. You saw a lot of change, and there was like this fresh air that blew through that didn't so much condemn people, but call people to their morality and to have a moral bar and to reach for it. What's interesting to me is that Trump has met with evangelicals, he's met with black pastors across this country, and no one has challenged him on the core tenets of his belief system, which is to build a bridge and not a wall, and to not create separation but more integration. Because
I mean, the opposite of that is his
opposite of that. So yet people are having to choose, I think, whether or not I have more of my political position or whether or not my faith is going to govern my political posture. And so I think it was a great statement. I think the Pope can say it. I think that the fear and the threat is that when the Pope speaks, millions of people are going to pay attention to him, because when he speaks, everybody listens.
You know, I hear what you're saying, but I also was listening to the news the other day, and they were saying a lot of evangelicals don't necessarily agree with the Pope or the Catholics necessarily. So that being said, you know, I don't think it's going to make much a difference with Trump. And I mean, just what I mean, his track record, he gets hit left and right with people that are making sense, and it just seems that the people that are following him don't care. So I don't know if it's going to really do anything against Trump, more or less help him in his journey to the White House.
But see, this is the tension, though. What the Pope said was not a doctrinal statement. It wasn't about a doctrinal disposition that says, you believe this, I believe that. This actually strikes at the core tenets of every Christian belief, which is that we give and that we are bridge builders. We reach out to bring people in. So when the Pope throws this commentary out there about building a bridge and that really not being Christian to talk about building a wall, then he's saying, be confronted. Are you politically positioned in a posture that is consistent with your faith, the tenets of your faith, or are you not? And I think that's a challenging question. I think that evangelicals will have to wrestle with it. I think Christians of all levels will have to wrestle with that. Am I looking out for the widows and the, you know, and the orphans, as the Bible says?
Is there not a question of, and we talked about this last week, Stacey and I, is there not a question about separation of church and state, though? I mean, if so, what if it's incongruent with his beliefs? If he feels as though that's what's right, and this is just me clearly playing devil's advocate.
Yes, you are.
If he feels, if Donald feels as though that's what's right for the country, why should his religious beliefs affect how he governs?
Okay, but you're saying that in the sense of separation between church and state, and there's obviously not a separation between church and state. And especially with the presidential candidates, like, they want you to know that they are somewhat of some type of American faith that they're following. So to say that is, it's kind of contradictory. If he's like, well, I'm just trying to do what's good for the country but not follow my faith, so are you, like, where are you at? Because that's what people want to know. They want to know, like, okay, are you really, like, hands in your faith, and Catholic or Christian? I'm not sure what he claims he is.
I think he claims Christianity. Presbyterian.
Presbyterian.
Okay.
So, I mean, are you with your faith, or are you just breaking those apart? I mean, it's a dialogue that needs to happen. Unfortunately, I think Trump will find a way to deflect it and make it to his benefit. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to be the problem with
this. Well, he's chosen to not really be offended at this point by it. When I heard him do the town hall meeting with Anderson Cooper last night, he says, I thought the tone was a little bit easier than what the media has portrayed it to be.
I think he said that because his people were telling him, look, don't go against the Pope.
Yeah.
Don't go against
don't
the Pope, man. Because at first he was like, the Pope is going to wish and pray that Donald Trump was president when ISIS attacks, you know, the church. So,
which was, and he made like a little joke about the Pope living in a wall.
So that's the first thing he
the
said.
The Vatican surrounded by walls. So is every building ever built.
So he's coming hard at first. I think his people were like, look, back off that just a tad, because you don't want to go against
the man of God. Right? He's
right. Yeah, you know, because it's true. Because even though people might not necessarily agree with him, he is a leader of a huge, like, faith. And to go against him is like, I mean, you start looking like the Antichrist after that. I mean, just honestly.
But
so.
I don't think that the Pope making a statement that is consistent with his belief and the belief of Christendom globally, for the most part, is a breach of the line between church and state. And I'm with Anthony. I believe there isn't a line. And the reason I say that is because when I go to the voting polls...
Do you believe there should be?
Do I believe there should be a line between church and state? No, I just believe that there should be the individual perspective. I think that when I walk into a poll, or when I have a conversation, or when I'm contemplating a political issue, the tenets of my faith are present with me. It's difficult for me to separate those two, simply because I have to interpret things. You know, and when there's an interpretation, how do I ignore the core beliefs that I have when I'm interpreting that thing? Does that make sense? Okay. So I bring those tenets in to kind of help me have a peace, to kind of help navigate me through this decision or through this dilemma. And I think that's difficult to say you can't bring that in. Now, I believe you can't bring it in to mandate control for other people. I can't bring my faith in and make a decision for you. I can't. I can bring my faith in to kind of cast my lot on this vote, in this decision, and whatever unanimously comes out looks like a democracy to me.
But you say that, but then if you're, and again, this is again just me playing devil's advocate, but if the way in which you vote, which is based on your belief, does infringe upon someone else's right to whatever, isn't that sort of contradictory as well?
No, because if you ask me if I believe in abortion and I say yes or no to that question, that's just my belief.
Okay.
In a democracy, I have a chance to vote.
You would be voting for someone who would implement laws.
I would vote for my belief. I would vote based on my opinion, which may be promoted by my belief, but the majority is going to determine what's law.
Let me not make an assumption. Do you believe in abortion? Do you believe that women have a right to choose?
I believe that everyone has a right to choose. Okay. I do believe that. I don't have a problem saying that. I'm Christian.
Okay.
You know, but I am pro-choice in that respect because I believe that everyone has a free will.
Right.
Now, when I go to vote, I may vote no. You know, I could, hypothetically speaking, I could vote no. But that's my vote. That's me bringing my consciousness to that vote, that voting poll. And then I say, because I'm obeying the laws of the land in a democracy, whatever the majority, you know, decides, that becomes the law.
Okay.
And I respect that law. I think that's how we deal with that. Don't be looking at me around your head. This brother over here.
I feel like, you know, just to bring it back to Trump, as much as we love doing that here, I just feel like I think, you know, it's not going to really affect him. He's someone who says these inflammatory things all the time, and he seems to be getting more and more popular with every nonsensical thing.
His core is strong, and it's kind of hard to break it. And I mean, people are talking, but you know, with South Carolina coming up and everything, it's like if he wins. Like, the talk is, will Trump be unstoppable? Mm. And, I mean, my thing is, like, maybe not, like, impossible to be, but, man, very difficult. Because, I mean, once you get that far in, you know, in the race and people are still backing you, no matter after all of the things you said, after all the people that you've went against, and you're still ahead, it's like, it's scary because you're probably going to be up there.
Yeah.
So I don't think Trump's really worried. I think his people and, you know, his core group is kind of telling him, like, stick to what you do best.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, be a little bit cynical, because at the end of the day, you don't want to come off too hard to someone that is seen as very important to the rest of the world. So you just kind of like, you could come after Obama hard. Bam, go against the other Republicans hard. That's fine. People are very touchy about the religion. I mean, you know, it's one of those things people talk about. You don't talk about religion or politics at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. But since this is politics, you know, we're going to talk about that. But we're going to try to leave religion out just a tad, because he just doesn't want to come off like as a bad guy in any sense, especially this close to the end of the race. So he's just kind of, I think he's playing it real smart. I mean, I think his people got together. It's just, I don't know, it's just, it's very frightening for me to even think that Trump is very well going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. But he just seems like he's on a roll here.
I feel
like
we should unplug your mic.
I don't want to jump too much off topic, but then you got to think, like, Obama came after him. Within the last 24 hours. George W. Bush came after him in the last 24 hours. That's a Republican and a Democrat past president and the Pope, yet you're not hearing that. Nobody's, like, it's not huge news. Like, they're playing it on Facebook and social media. I see, like, the plays of it, but it's not huge news. You'd think, like, though all those people, like, two different sides are saying the same thing and a huge religious leader, yet His polls have not dropped a little bit.
Well, his messaging in the last couple of weeks hasn't been consistently Democrat or Republican, believe it or not, because if you remember the last GOP debate, he got some boos from the crowd when he questioned the official narrative of 9/11.
He did.
And that's I mean, for lack of a better word, scandalous, I guess, on that side. But
he went into George Bush's territory where he had a lot of supporters there.
Which could hamper his support in South Carolina, George Bush's support in South Carolina, because his poll numbers, I believe, are pretty strong there.
Yeah.
George Bush's, Jeb Bush's. So they all look alike. I think it could hurt him, but I think the litmus test will be South Carolina for Trump.
If he
doesn't even have to win. I think if he beats Jeb Bush.
Oh, I mean, he's going to beat Jeb Bush. He'll beat Jeb Bush.
We don't know that.
I don't even think, I'm just looking at how everything's coming around. I don't think Jeb Bush is really going to be, he might be third. He's not going to be top two by any chance. I think it's him.
With his poll numbers in that state, you think he might still come in third?
I don't think he's going to hold on. I mean, I'm worried because, I sort of favor Jeb Bush on the Republican side, and I think that this might be his towel. Like, I think he might throw up the flag after South Carolina just by looking at everything and how everybody's receiving all the Republican candidates. So I don't think Trump's worried about Jeb Bush.
Who do you think he's worried about, Marco?
I think he's definitely worried about Marco. Not necessarily, because Marco, I think, is the closest contender to him. Cruz and Marco were kind of head in head, but I think because of the whole like Photoshop thing and everybody's making a big deal about that, that Cruz has kind of dropped down
a little bit.
Explain
to people what that is.
Basically, Ted Cruz has this thing on his page, and it looks like Marco Rubio is shaking the hand of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. He looks real happy, excited to see him. Come to find out, it's a Photoshop of some random white man and random black man. They put the heads of Rubio and Obama on him and blacked it out, black and whited it out, or grayscaled it to make it, kind of look real. And, literally, it wasn't 24 hours before they found out that it was fake. And it kind of made this huge scandal, like, okay, as much as Rubio and Trump are talking about the lies that Ted Cruz says about them, this kind of confirms it. Like, he's sketchy. And I think that's what I think that messed Cruz up a little bit for South Carolina. So I think it's really about Marco and Donald in the Republican side for this.
But I don't know that we've seen a real strong trend of Rubio on the incline in other polls.
I agree with you. I don't think he's been increasing in the polls much.
He's lacking a likability factor, but I think there could be an X factor here that could come through, which I'm hoping for, because I think we need something to push Donald Trump out of the way. I just don't want him I don't want to have America to have that conversation.
But I think that's the conversation
The conversation of Donald Trump potentially becoming the president of the United States.
That's the one we're having now.
Yeah, Everybody's talking about Rubio or Cruz being the runner-up. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's thinking, like, oh, they're going to beat Trump. Everybody's talking about how Trump's obviously going to be the front-runner, and then we're looking at who's going to be the next person up. But no, you guys might be hearing something else, but I'm not hearing Bush's name in that runner-up.
I don't know if you're looking at this, too, but what I'm noticing is that Bush seems to be taking a slightly different disposition. His whole approach, his appeal to the people, his relatability seems to be more likable here lately. And I think it has a lot to do with his mom and brother coming on the road with him.
He just more so his mom, I think.
Yeah. Maybe his mom.
Everybody loves him.
People love Barbara Bush. A lot of people do. Yeah, people do. I think it's probably wise for him to continue bringing his mom onto the campaign trail. One thing I just wanted to mention real quick, just like a nod, a little kudos to you, Donald Trump. I don't know if you knew this, but JebBush.com, the domain expired, and Donald Trump bought the domain and had JebBush.com now redirecting to DonaldTrump.com. Just FYI.
Hilarious.
I thought that was hilarious.
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 I think it was hilarious, but I also think that, you know what, if America's looking for a trustworthy president with integrity and some scruples, come on, guys, really? I mean, I get it.
Nobody's looking for that in Trump.
Listen, when I'm talking business, Donald Trump, please take a seat at the table, head of the table.
No.
Take several seats. If I'm talking politics and come on, are you serious?
Nobody's talking that in Trump's group. You can't say that Trump he's got so much integrity. He bashes everybody every chance he gets.
Wait, is that what you're saying, though? I got something else from that.
What did you get? That's what I was saying.
Oh, is that what you were saying?
No, okay, I'm saying that he lacks integrity. I mean, I think it's bitchy. It's, you know, it's, it is. It's, I have to use that word.
I mean, it's the state of politics right now. And we're following politics very closely because we have the show and we obviously, you know, this is something that we're
doing every week. He buys the domain.
But, you know, politics to me is the entertainment branch of government. But we have to move on because...
I'm so done.
Okay. We've got a few more months left. Did you hear about this story about Apple versus the FBI?
It's kind of crazy.
So I'm just going to read the first few lines of a New York Times article about this story. Tuesday evening, a federal court ordered Apple to help the FBI unlock an iPhone used by one of the attackers who killed 14 people in San Bernardino in December. Wednesday morning, the very next day, Apple said in a strongly worded letter, and I encourage everyone to read this letter because it is very strongly worded, that it would challenge the court's request. While technology companies recently have resisted government demands, Apple's letter is one of the industry's most forceful pushbacks against the court ruling. And Twitter and Facebook have actually come out in support of Apple, saying basically the same thing, that this is a backdoor to a privacy issue for a lot of Americans. I believe the technology that they would have to use in order for that information to be decrypted or be available to the FBI has not been invented yet.
So they say.
Yeah. But Apple is very concerned that if that is in the wrong hands, you know, potential calamities can ensue. So what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's without a thought. Of course the government, like, getting that type of technology is going to use it for not so good things. I mean, let's be honest. The NSA with the whole Patriot Act thing that mm-hmm. went on with metadata and all that. I mean, they have a track record of using things not the way they're supposed to. And I think if they get that type of technology, even if Apple theoretically could make it for that one phone, they're mm-hmm. going to take that technology, hire some people, and figure out how to use it for other things. And I just think it's a slippery slope. I don't agree with the federal government coming at Apple like that, a private company, trying to tell them that they need to give up their, you know, privacy of, you know, millions of people that have bought the iPhone just for a terrorist attack. And I think they think that using the terrorist attack as their platform, kind of like, people are going to look at it like, oh yeah, we don't want that to happen, but they're not thinking deeper. And that's the problem. And it's just a scary thought, man, to have the government have all my information, if possible.
I mean, just to give a little more, because I kind of did it on the surface, I just want to give a little more information as to what the government is actually asking. iPhone in question is a 5C version of the smartphone that was released in 2013, as we all know, is locked by passcode, which the FBI wants Apple to circumvent. Now, Apple, in order to do that, would have to build a new version of its iOS smartphone software that allows the FBI to bypass certain restrictions. And that's when Apple says, the potential to unlock any iPhone in someone's physical possession is great. And we hold a responsibility. Our responsibility lies in our customers. We can't put all of them in jeopardy because you feel like this is some sort of altruistic thing.
First, I'm done. Am I correct in saying that didn't Apple say something along the lines of, if they create this software, they can't do it for just one phone, one-time use? And that would be, that's why Apple is kind of like, no, I can't do this, because it can't be the software would be overcompassing and it could be potentially used again.
Well, they can. I mean, here they can certainly do it for one. I mean, I'm sure they can certainly code it to work on one phone, but the problem is once that code exists, it's just one hack away from getting into the wrong hands.
Exactly.
And so you can apply the same code to any phone. It's not that they, like, if my phone is locked and Apple wants to unlock it using whatever code that they would have to develop, yes, it would work on this phone, but we all have iPhones here.
Yeah.
It could probably work on your phone and your phone just by tweaking some of the coding language. And so that is their concern. Don, I feel you trying to jump in here.
No, you know, I mean, so Tim Cook, who's like Apple CEO, right? He makes a statement. I want to read
it. He is Apple CEO.
He is the CEO, right? He made a statement. I want to read it. Once the information is known, or a way to bypass the code is revealed, the encryption can be defeated by anyone with that information. And to me, if I pay attention to the words, once it is known and once the code is revealed, which means to me, to reveal something means it's there already.
Oh, okay.
Right? You only reveal something that's there. It's just not known by you.
Getting deep.
Okay.
You follow me? So once we do that, then if it's in your hand, the information that we give you will then empower you to be able to turn this into something else. So I think two things are going on. I think Apple is doing a very great job here by taking this posture because they're making us all believe that they're watching out for our privacy. They're not watching out for our privacy. They know everything we do.
Well, of course they know everything we do.
It's just not revealed yet.
Well, I think with... given the history, given our governmental history, I think
no trust.
It's no wonder that people are a little apprehensive to allow this to to allow the government to be so all up in their business, you know. And so my thing is, I see what I think Apple is doing it in the best interest. If there's a privacy breach, if for some reason Apple is now considered to be, after a breach, after a hack, you know, not the most reliable, and it can no longer claim to be, you know, the most secure or whatever it is that they claim to be. And so that does hurt their bottom line. So I disagree with you. I think they are doing it for the best interest of their customer base and for their market.
You can disagree with me. I don't care.
You know, I kind of agree with Julian, too, because I think, like, they know that if for some reason that they had any type of information to backdoor the encryptions that they have, I mean, their stock's going to drop because people are going to get out thinking this isn't safe. I mean, I love Apple, but if I feel like my privacy is not as safe as it could possibly be with them, then I'm leaving too. I just couldn't imagine that. To think that, you know, there is a back door to some of our stuff. And I've watched YouTube videos on how to hack phones. And I mean,
it's actually not that hard.
It's not that hard, which makes me think, like, it just makes me nervous about, like, okay, if they give that out, it makes it a lot more easier. Well, I mean, you just think about all the stuff that you've had in your phone, all the things you said in opposition of, I mean, us being political analysts, I guess, in a sense.
Okay.
You know, you just think about all the things I say in opposition of, like, government and things like that. And, you know, then they start able to read my text messages and the posts that I make that are somewhat anonymous to myself and whoever I'm talking to, and they can pinpoint me, and then they start following me, you know, to watch what I do. It's a scary thought.
But you don't think they're doing that now?
No, I think they've did
doing
that.
What now?
I think they did that. I don't think that Apple is allowing that, though. I think the government is doing it in a certain sense, but I don't think Apple is allowing it.
No, and Apple hasn't gone and said you can do this, but Apple has created a technology that...
They haven't created it yet, according to Apple.
According to Apple, but they use the word, like, revealed. And I know, I hear that. That's double talk in that quote. If you really go back and linguistically look at it, it's double talk. So it's just not being shared, but it's there. And I know it's there because I know how I use my phone. Mm-hmm. And I know how my phone pays careful attention to everything I do, everywhere I go. And I know that if I make a phone call, they'll know which tower it came off of, so they'll know geographically where I am. I know that if I search for something, there's all this integration where they can tell me what I looked for. So now I get ads for what I looked for on my Facebook and on my... Really? We think these guys don't know how to get past this. They're watching everything that we do.
So you're it doesn't matter for you. It doesn't matter if it's a third party or a governmental party.
No. Well, it doesn't matter, I mean, exactly. Because I don't know whether or not I trust the third party or the private sector any more than I trust the government.
Okay.
I do believe that if I got in trouble, the government would probably do something to me. But that's a far shot, right?
If I got into
any type of legal trouble,
okay,
and the government wanted to come into my phone and kind of track my dealings, my connections, my conversations, I think, yeah, that would be scary. But chances are, for a guy like me and most of our viewers, that's not going to be the case. We will more likely become victims to someone getting our information that we store on our phone, like our nude pictures, for some people have had that happen, or your text messages being sent, or your voicemails being compromised, or your emails being hacked, or your Facebook or Twitter account being compromised because they were able to hack your phone. We'll be more victim there than we will ever be to the government.
You're saying something interesting. I'm wondering, like, if it's so easy to hack a phone, like, kind of like that. And I mean, it is. I mean, there's been celebrities that have their iCloud hacked. You know, they have all these things up. Why doesn't the government just hire some type of hacker to open a phone?
The NSA has a huge team of people.
So they do. So,
but they can't, you know.
So what are they coming at Apple for exactly then? Like, well, why, if they have that huge team, what's the whole point?
Let's just be clear about one thing. Apple, this whole thing, this whole opposition is purely ideological, right? Yeah. They're not legally obligated to do this. This is why they're grandstanding in this case.
Right.
What was your question? I just wanted to clear that up.
No, I just want to. I'm kind of confused on
why they wouldn't hire someone.
Right, the federal government has the I guess the resources to do this without Apple. Why are they making such a big deal to Apple to do it for them?
Because the federal government shouldn't have the power to ask a private company, right? Essentially, or not a private company, but a company to do something that's against the interest of their customers. Like, the government is supposed to be checked and balanced, right? And so when you give, historically, right, when you give a person or a group of individuals called government overreaching power, it tends to overreach. So that's the concern of people.
So basically the government is just trying to be like PC about it, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Because remember what stirred this is what happened in San Bernardino.
Right.
You have the married couple that wind up killing 14 people out there in San Bernardino. To me, it's very questionable circumstance anyway, because that whole situation just seemed to evolve. We didn't have pictures of the woman. We had all these questions about why this guy would, you know, come back and do all this stuff. We then have all this. We have social security cards and driver's license and a house left wide open that the government left unsecured and unprotected. Mm-hmm. And now they want to come to us and say, in order to stop things like that from happening, we probably need to have access to information through the phone.
Exactly. And that's the problem.
Why would I even grant you, or why would I vote, or why would I support to granting you that? And you couldn't even pick up the man's driver's license off of his bed before you let the general public and news media walk in.
Yeah, well, that's the argument. That's why people are concerned.
Yeah.
It's like, if you have shown to be, I don't want to say incompetent, but if you have shown to lack in a certain area when it comes to gathering intelligence,
mm-hmm.
What makes you think that the mass gathering of intelligence will help you anymore in that regard?
And that I will trust you handling my info.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that you won't, yeah, exactly, handling your info or accurately analyzing that info and not falsely arresting people or, you know, misusing your power.
And that's the thing, that's the misuse of the information, if they get it, is what's most troubling to me. I mean again, they make this case about a terrorist and it mm-hmm. sounds good, like on the media, like, oh, of course I want to protect, you know, our country from the terrorists. But then you think, like, no, because I'm for that, but at the same time, you're going to use this information somewhere down the line against me or someone, you know, like me, and that's where the problem lies. That's why I just can't let it happen. Again, it's a slippery slope, and I think the government has a track record of doing those things. I don't trust them, like, with an inch, so I'm not going.
It's a fear tactic, though, isn't it? And that's why I
wonder. And that's what they're using, and I just think it's crazy to even consider it. Like, for anybody to even think about that, like Donald Trump making that statement the other day, like no. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, I think they should just work with the FBI. Like, no, because Trump, if people found a way to get into your shit, like, you would be singing a whole nother tune.
Absolutely.
Like the next day. And that's kind of what I feel like, that's what's going to happen. If this happens, it just opens the door to so many other things. So I think Apple, if you're watching, somebody that works Apple, don't give in. Because this is just, I mean, it's just crazy to even think about stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, if this, you're right, it's a slippery slope. And I think, and a lot of people, I think, believe that if the government is allowed to do that, then where does it end? I mean, then your local sheriff is allowed to, like, hack your phone and see, you know.
Right, they make a phone call and boom, they got everything.
They have everything.
No.
So where does that end? That's the question. That is the concern. That there's potential for abuse of power.
There is, like, that. I mean, we're in such a tech savvy era right now. With that happening, there is no privacy.
Yeah,
well,
what's
we
the
had the whistleblower.
Yeah,
what's the guy.
There's Edward Snowden.
Snowden is his name. So we've got that situation that's also playing as background music to this inquiry to me.
But yeah, like with the NSA using metadata and grabbing all that from people's internet pages and things like that. Well, that's what I'm saying, is like they have that track record.
It's already being done. So why quit? I don't know.
So what does that say? What does that say about control of private property? Because Apple's this is not Apple's phone. Apple manufactures this phone, but this is my phone. I paid for this phone. So how is it that private isn't that an infringement of private property? Or there's got to be some sort of legal gray area.
That's what Apple was trying to make a statement. It's like, even if we could do that, that's not our property anymore. Yeah. We create it, but that's once they buy that phone, that's all theirs. Like, that's their phone to use. That's their property. So we really don't have anything to do with it anyway. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't even come to us. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to say with that. And I mean, I agree with that. You know, because, I mean, at the end of the day, if I don't pay my phone bill, Apple's not going to take my phone away.
Right.
You know, like, I already paid for my phone. No one's going to take the phone away, so it's not theirs. You know, they don't have that right. So why would we even come to Apple to ask them to do that? And that's what I follow on Don's thing is, like, it seems like something else is going on in the fact of why they even want these backdoor openings for the encryptions in the iPhone.
But just again just playing devil's advocate, wouldn't you agree that, you know, the government having as much information as can help them aid in a potential terrorist attack is a good thing?
This is my thing. If the government, with all the power and brilliant minds that they have behind them, don't need a backdoor to iPhone to solidify their power, then obviously obviously we shouldn't be, like, trusting them. Like, this shouldn't be the thing to say, if we don't have this, I don't know what we're going to do now. Mm-hmm. No. So I don't think that. I do think that they have things set in place. They have minds. They have people that know what they're doing to figure out terrorist plots and things like that, or whatever they're doing. It shouldn't be an encryption to a phone that's going to, like, solidify everything. And if that is the case, then we should really worry about our governments, like, I mean, what they're really following. Like, that shouldn't be it.
Well, I've heard that the iPhone is one of the more difficult phones to hack into.
Maybe the newest one, but I tell you, I watched a couple YouTube phones
hacked right into them.
Hacked right into my own phone.
Well, you got to upgrade them. That's now a 4, or is that a 3?
This is a 6, but you trying to come?
Trying to dog on this, it? Kind of
this is a 6, but the old phone I had, I definitely watched the YouTube, and I did it a couple times, but it took me a couple times, but I hacked into my phone. My own phone. And it's just like, it was something through pictures, like through your pictures, and you, like, hold down real quick. It was crazy, man. But I had it in my phone. Now I can't do it. And I was trying to find that, couldn't work. But I mean, I don't know.
Well, listen, this is obviously something that's going to continue on. I'm now reading some things that there's a federal representative that has responded in saying that this is just a great marketing ploy on behalf of Apple. So clearly, this isn't going anywhere.
I kind of think I think that too on some level. I really do.
Okay.
All I say is hashtag leave my phone alone.
Hashtag stay away from Don's phone.
Right.
So our final topic is the very contentious nature of this the politics behind the Supreme Court nominee. So let me just give you some background information for those. I'm sure you all know, because we all read news online, but it's been circulating heavily the last week.
Had the wake today.
Justice Antonin Scalia passed away last week. Sorry. And I guess fight to name his replacement is on, with Republicans saying that the president shouldn't nominate a Supreme Court justice while he's in office. They should wait until there's a new president to go ahead and put forth that nomination. And folks on the left are saying that it is Obama's duty to do that nominate, to, you know, make that nomination, and it would be unprecedented for a Supreme Court justice seat to be vacant for that long. Mm-hmm. What do you think? First of all, it is Obama's duty. That is one. He nominates the Supreme Court justice, but he doesn't appoint.
He doesn't appoint. Right. It goes through Congress, right?
Congress or the Senate? Right? Comment below if you know the answer to this. Clearly, we're experts. But it isn't the president who only nominates the Supreme Court justice. He doesn't confirm that.
Right. It's once he nominates, it is kind of like Senate. it's a big thing. So that's why they're making the issue that he shouldn't even nominate them. Because usually how it goes is they nominate them, most likely that is going to be
I think is ridiculous. Also, I think it's absolutely ridiculous to tell the president that he should not do what he has the right to do. Mm-hmm. Who does that?
Well, I mean, it's a big decision, and I understand where they're coming from.
All
in
of
terms
his decisions
of,
are.
Well, this is one of them, sure. I think the makeup of the Supreme Court is now, it's pretty even. I think
it'll tilt the scales.
It'll tilt the scales in the favor of whomever, you know, is
either. Right. So it's an obvious reason that the majority wants to keep the control of right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I get that. But how do you take that a step further and tell the president that he should not do what he has the right and authority to do?
It's all a ploy because the Republicans are thinking we have a really good chance to get into office for this next year. We don't want the Democrat picking the nomination for the judicial, you know, the Supreme Court justice.
They don't even like who they think might be their nominee.
Well, that's what they're just kind of saying is like they figure whoever Obama's picking is going to be less great to them than whoever gets into office next because they are banking that, you know, their Republican nominee is going to get in office. So they're trying to hold it out until then. And I think that's really all it comes down to is they think they have a very good shot at getting into office, so they want to wait to get a Republican in to pick a very conservative justice.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why they're trying to hold out. I definitely agree it's the president's duty to do that, and he should, and he knows he should, so that's why he's going for it. And I think it's kind of scandalous that, again, I don't know, as the Senate, saying that, you know, we're going to throw out everybody you come. That's stupid. Like, that just doesn't work.
That we're going to just throw out everybody.
Democracy that we're doing. Like, okay. And looking at the top people that he's thinking about, I mean, some of them are conservative. Some are
It's the
moderate.
Senate, by the way. I just Googled it.
I mean, some are, you know, conservative. I think he has a well-rounded thought process of who he wants to pick, so you shouldn't just be like, you know, that's Obama, we don't like him, we're not picking anybody.
Well, we also have to remember this is a lifetime appointment, right?
Right.
So it's you'll be either a majority left or a majority right Supreme Court for life, you know, depending on who he nominates and who's confirmed.
I get it, but why is there no bipartisan conversation surrounding this? No one wants
because
to be bipartisan and just find someone
that can judge.
Because
it's in the midst of the presidential debate.
I'm calling to the integrity of all the political figures that would stand up and say that they want to reach across the lines, right, and have conversations. All of a sudden, when certain topics come up, there's no talk about
because
being bipartisan over these things.
Because when you're talking about reaching across the lines, when you're trying to tilt the scales of the Supreme Court justice, it can be more conservative or more liberal, like that's a big thing in a lifetime appointment. Like that one person that they put in that appointment, like, can change the outcome of like huge like court decisions. That's very hard for either side to be like, okay, let's come to a middle ground. Yeah. No one wants to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, I get, God rest his soul, Scalia. But I didn't like everything that came out that man's mouth. And yet, there's a lot of praise for the great work that he did and the contributions that he made. Right? So, I don't think you're going to get anyone to sit in that position that you're going to agree with straight across the board in every respect. Even Donald Trump, looking at it from the GOP side, Donald Trump was asked last night, if you were president and you had the opportunity to appoint, who would you appoint? Would they be Republican? That was the question. Mm-hmm. He said, well, I can't really say they would be Republican.
Donald Trump isn't a great litmus test for anything substantive.
Yet he's their front runner. So that, should he become the front runner, should he be lucky enough to win this thing and sit in the Oval Office, then what kind of selection would he make?
Not the problem, but that's the reason why, to answer your question. Yeah. That's why there's no real bipartisan discussion There's no civil discourse on this issue because it is such an important. I mean, it tilts the scales. It's huge.
So then let's just do what we do. Let's take it in order. Let's let the man, the president, make his nomination. Let's go through the process and not try to break it or reinvent it or modify it.
I think it would be easier if it wasn't during a presidential race.
Well, we're not talking about what I think, just to make sure we're on the same page, we're just talking about his nomination. I mean, he can nominate whoever he wants to nominate. It's up to the Senate to accept or reject that nomination. Mm. I mean, that's what the discussion is whether or not they're going to accept or reject whoever it is that Obama nominates. So there's
predetermined that they're not going to even move forward.
Well, they've predetermined that a lot of what Obama's trying to move forward is not going to move forward. So, you know.
Well, listen, they ought to take the pulse of some of those other Supreme Court appointed people.
Stop.
Because some of them don't need an IV drip. I'm just saying.
Bye. Stop.
Just saying.
I know. It's going to be huge. And I think Obama needs to go ahead and make this. I mean, he needs to at least try. I think he's waiting too. I think he needs to go ahead and make it very promptly because they're going to reject the first person off the bat.
Well, he said
I think.
In due time. He didn't say.
Well, yeah, I know he's going to do it, rush, but I think it's going to be an all-out battle. And if he's trying to get somebody in before he gets out, they might. What's the word? Like they might try to hold him out. They might try to hold him out and
filibuster him
until he's out of office, and then they could do it. So I think he needs to get the ball rolling. I mean, he probably already has, but he needs to get it going.
There was implication that a president should not make a nomination. I forget who said this. Should not make a nomination if he had less than 5 months remaining in term.
I don't know how that would make, or if you know it, yes.
I feel like a few of them have said that to some in some way or another.
But why would that even?
But like, if he had less than 5 months, simply because it takes more than that time to vet the individual that's being considered. Mm-hmm. So that if you had more than 5 months, then you reasonably have enough time to vet that individual, and then you know have a determination or an induction, if you will. So with Obama having now 11 months left. It's reasonable that he should be able to make that nomination and we move forward through the normal process.
All right.
Well, people feel ways on both sides.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And that's what this whole thing is about, and that's what hopefully, you know, the conversation around the nation is as well. So, you know, this isn't going anywhere either.
No way.
I'm sure we'll pick up the topic again in the weeks to come because it is a very important election now because of this. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But guys, that's it.
That's it. We've done it all.
We've done it all. Listen, thank you guys so much for joining us every week. I'm Julian Dujarric. You can catch me across the board on all social media at Julian Dujarric. Tell everybody where they can find you.
What's up? I'm Black Fist Activist, also known as Anthony Martin. You can check me out on all social media. Come talk to me about the tea party. Let's get it going. Anything, man. I'm out here. I'm just trying to be in your world. Let's do it.
And Don, where can they find you?
With this head wrap. Hey, find me on Instagram, Don Nash, Mr. Don Nash. Find me on Twitter, Don's Daily Dose, and Don Nash on Facebook. Let's talk about it. Let's get the tea.
Let's do it. Well, until next week, thank you all so much for joining us. We will see you next Friday.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood redefined, baby.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or parents.